Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! San Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Tuesday, June 8, 2021, and this is episode 227 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the team with the best record in all of baseball, the San Francisco Giants. We are coming to you live on Facebook like we do every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever we come out here. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today is Willie Dills Gregory, OG. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Ready to talk about some friggin' baseball. First place Giants. It's pretty pumped, man. Pretty pumped over here.
And then rejoining the show, you had a couple weeks off. Eric Nathanson, man, how you doing?
Great. It was wonderful to see the Giants beat the crap out of the Cubs this weekend. I enjoyed it very, very much.
So your wife is a Cubs fan, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So how did she respond to this weekend?
Well, she kind of accepted the butt-kicking after Friday night. You know, it looked like the Giants were just so in control. And then Saturday afternoon, and we'll get to that game, when things went haywire in the ninth, it was right after she had saged the house. So she claimed that she, you know, had pushed the Cubs to win that game, but they still blew that game. So she kind of took that one to heart a little bit. She was happy to see they bounced back yesterday. And she's like, see, I told you they're not bad. And I mean, I know the Cubs are bad.
Yeah, they're not, but obviously they're not bad.
They're the best record in baseball in May. I mean, they're a good team.
So they'd won 9 of 10 going into that series. And, you know, and the Giants obviously feel like we're playing pretty good, but we're weathering the storm. We got guys moving in and out. We're just making all these moves. It's like, okay, this is going to be a significant test, a 4-game series. And I think we passed the test. But the Cubs would be your second team, right, Eric?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I pull for them when I'm not watching. It is a little weird watching Chris Bryant and not rooting for him to do something, especially because sure. KB, just, he loves hitting in San Francisco for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we can get him later. Who knows? We'll see. Yeah, the Giants are rolling, though. I mean, best record in baseball. Still, we're past the third way mark, right, for the season. They're 37-22, 15 games over 500. That is on pace for 101 wins, which is just insane. And I don't think, again, we fully expect them to cross 100 wins. But, I mean, they have different sites now putting the Giants above 90% in terms of odds of making the playoffs. That's like, it was like at 6% at the beginning of the year. So people are starting to come around on them.
Yeah, they're consistently in the top five now in the power rankings every time.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue. Like, what's funny is they didn't move this last one. It's not like I really give a crap about that stuff.
Yeah,
but right now I'm paying.
Polls.
Yeah, I'm paying a lot more attention now because it's just funny to watch. When is the national media going to give the Giants credit, right, for this record? I got to say, being in the top five, I think that's as much credit as you could give a team based on like where they were projected to be. Right.
Yeah.
So no. I don't know. I saw some bitching about it on Reddit and I was like, God, what do you expect here? Like, they're not going to give them number one. Like, it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. When you put all the teams together and look at the rosters on paper, the Giants still don't jump off the page. You know,
it is funny because, you know, okay, they have the best record in baseball. We know this. But it's power rankings, right? It's like an opinionated poll and based on
it's not standards.
Not just record. Yeah, if they just said, oh, here are the top 10 records in all of baseball, that's what that would be. But that's not what it is.
Just look
right?
in the newspaper every day and see that. What's the point of this?
Yeah, you
this
can
is
do
a different
that,
thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
well,
is so upset
hot,
about
not.
That. It's so funny.
It's like college football, and the Giants are like when Stanford or Cal has like a great season out of nowhere, and they shoot up the polls, and their fans are like, why aren't we number one? We're undefeated just like Alabama and Notre Dame. And it's like, because you're not Alabama and Notre Dame, you're still ranked, you know, third. Just be happy you're in the top five for now.
And then, you know, you could have said, by the way, strength of – because a lot of that college stuff, strength of schedule matters a lot, but – I think the Giants at this point, it's kind of evened out across the board, as far, at least as far as the West teams. I mean, we've played some good teams now, and we're still and we're passing all those tests. The Cubs were just another test that was passed by this team. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, like you said, Eric, winning 9 of 10, you know, coming into this series, they kind of, yeah, you're thinking, okay, they just took 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers. This will be another good test, because that's been a knock on the Giants so far. I think prior to the Cubs series, they said that the Giants have had the third easiest strength of schedule thus far. And so they were pinning a lot of their success. Well, you know, they're not playing the hardest teams or whatever. So here comes the Cubs, which are, you know, hot and had the best record in May, and they took 3 out of 4. And really, I mean, it's not like they just lost the last game, but they could have won that game if it wasn't for a mistake there, right? I mean,
well, Buster Posey gets thrown out of the plate on a really good throw, and then later on makes an error. You know, yeah, easy.
Rough, yeah, that was a rough.
It's how a lot of games in baseball are won and lost, though. It's like you think, go back to the Darren Ruff grand slam that went foul by 6 inches, right? It's like that game was lost based on that. And everybody got so sad about that. You know, it's like, yeah, but I'm sure there's plenty of Giants games that we've won on small things, but we just go, that was supposed
Hell
to happen.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's just how the fan mind works, you know?
Yeah, the baseball minutia in terms of, you know, the game of inches and one play determining a game doesn't always work in your favor 100% of the time. It's going to go against you, you know, roughly half the time over a long period. But, Yeah, they're doing well. Also, I wanted to note that they've now played 59 games, which is roughly what they played last year, right? So, because the standings are where they are right now, if these were the standings last year, the Giants would have won the West already. Like, mathematically, they have the West locked up.
Yeah, they would have
Which is really interesting.
They're a game and
yeah,
a half
they would have clinched.
At this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Padres
Although,
have played more games.
The 60-game season, the Dodgers won 43. So if it was the exact Dodgers from last season and this exact Giants, I think the Dodgers probably,
Yeah, I actually looked at
43 out of 60 is crazy, and that's what.
Yeah, and the Rays were 40 out of 60. They were 40 and 20.
Yeah.
So there were actually two teams, like you just said, the Dodgers and the Rays, that were actually better than the Giants would be now, winning 37 or 38 games.
Best team in baseball right now, and we're talking 6 games more that we would have had to win.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, so let's put it this way. If they had this record last year, they still would have been a wild card. So,
sure. But also, I'll say this. I could think of 6 games right now that the Giants should have won this year. So, they could have, maybe.
Which is crazy to think about, because I don't think that you can think of 6 games that they should have lost. You know what I mean?
No.
I don't think this is one of those things that's evened itself out over time. I really think that the Giants have blown more opportunities than they've got.
For sure. The bullpen alone, just bullpen stuff, you know what I mean? Just dealing with the fact that we don't know who our closer really is, and, you know, who to go to in a close game, you know what I mean? And having a bunch of guys been given shots and failed, and then, you know, somehow still, you know, still 37 wins. It's nuts. This season doesn't make sense, honestly. When I think about it, I can't really figure out how we're here. And it was funny. There was a thread on Reddit that was like it was some gif of, like, what's the dude from Pirates of the Caribbean that Depp plays?
Jack Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow, yeah. It was him, like, going, like, he's, like, smiling, and then he, like, freaks out. And it was, like, Giants baseball in the ninth inning. And my comment was, like, well, technically, I, like, went in and, like, put my nerd glasses on. I was, like, technically, we're the best at being ahead after the ninth inning. So, therefore, we're the best ninth inning team in baseball, right? At the end of the ninth inning, we're ahead more than anybody else. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's a good way to put
it. It's easy. Yeah.
Factually correct.
Yeah. We always win in the ninth. I don't know what you, everyone's freaking out. But I know exactly what they're talking about, because we've had so many close calls, even on games that we pulled out. And then we've had some really, really horrible blown saves. So.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and yet they're sitting here with, what, like a plus 72 or 70 run differential? I mean, they're way up there just behind the Padres and Dodgers.
Well, actually, the Padres and Dodgers are better than us in that category.
That's what I'm saying. You're just behind, I think. I
mean, but it's not crazy. So look at the American League West.
A's. I think 4 out of 5 teams are actually have a negative run differential.
The first place A's are plus 6, and the second place Astros are plus 69.
So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
figure that one out.
And the A's were negative not that long ago.
Yeah.
Despite having a winning record. It was really weird. It was really weird. Yeah. For the record, I guess the Giants last year were actually plus two or minus two. I can't remember. But they were right even, Steven. So that shows you the progress, not just in the wins, but the run differential over, you know, 60 games. Quite a bit different. And, you know, it is. I'm still going to sit here predicting, you know, whatever I did, 74, 76 wins this year, something like that. I think it was 77. I'm shocked. I am still sitting here in shock, more than a third of the way through the season, how well they're doing. Best record in baseball. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it does in a couple of years with what Farhan's doing, but it just doesn't make sense right now, you know? But you have career years out of veterans that no one saw coming. You have the plug-and-play aspect, which, yeah, you expect eventually, but still, people that didn't necessarily have that track record are coming in. You know, Kapler's been pushing the right buttons in terms of pinch hitters, and I don't know. It's a wild ride so far, and it's like I still the pessimistic Giants fan in me still is waiting for the wheels to fall off, and I don't know why. I still have that dumb feeling, which is completely not backed up by any reasonable information. It's just the pessimist in me, I guess.
I'm with you on that. I am so like, it's not, I'm like cautiously optimistic is the best I could describe viewing the Giants at this point. You know, they're, like you said, they're through what the entirety was of last season. And had they been in this position, we'd be thrilled. But like right now, it's like they're doing it because of depth. I really think that Farhan and Scott Harris are the reason they're contending, because they're finding guys like Lamont Wade and, Jason Vossler and Mike Yastrzemski in the first place. But, you know, these guys that you talk about plugging and playing, Thyro Estrada.
Well, like Slater kind of a surprise this year, too. Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are like, what?
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, it's a testament to Farhan and them just going and plucking, you know, certain guys off other rosters and recognizing depth pieces. This is depth we haven't seen, I think, ever with the Giants. I don't ever recall a team getting injured this month. The Giants have had 28 different IL stints this season. That's including 60-day IL, 10-day IL, all that stuff. They've had 28. Only the Padres have had more with 29, and yet those are two of the best teams in baseball, and somehow they're getting through it. It's because of depth that they built, and the Giants will probably go for more depth at the trade deadline.
Yeah. Mike Dowling on Facebook saying that right now he believes that the Giants can win the World Series. Keep
well,
the faith,
I mean,
boys.
Everybody
right
can
now.
At this point.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think right now, sure, but come October or playoffs if they may get, you know.
But
who knows?
But this is the thing, though. You can call this depth, or maybe you call it the second guy in the rotation is not that much worse than the first guy in the rotation because the first guy is not that good. You know what I mean? It's like we don't have outside of Buster Posey, who's going to be in the All-Star game, right? I guess Gausman, but like. We're talking in all the other years. It's like there was like four or five guys who are having amazing seasons, right? And that's not what's happening right now. There's a bunch of guys still batting around 250, but it's just everybody's kind of doing that. You know what I mean? It's not, there's not like one guy carrying the load. It's just, and the guy who is plays 2/3 of the games, you know? So, it's a weird situation, but also it's possible. But this modern version of baseball that we keep talking about on this show, maybe the Giants foresaw that and have been building around that potential more than other teams had. Other teams had still been kind of doing the traditional, you know, this is how we need to do it. We got to get a couple. We got three, four, and five guys or whatever. And, you know, the Giants are like, we're going to build 1 through 8. It's all kind of solid. And we're going to let these guys take walks and then hit home runs. And then that's how, and we're going to get, you know, five decently solid pitchers. Yes, we have an ace who's, you know, but anybody could have been the step up guy. It's just like this team kind of feels built for what this modern version of baseball is.
Yeah. And you want to talk about home runs. The Giants are number two in all of baseball with 85 home runs, one behind the Atlanta Braves. That's crazy. That's just, again, mind boggling stat. I know they brought the fences in and everything. That has a little bit to do with it because we've seen a few home runs go over that new center field wall. But, I mean, overall, and they're seventh in the league in all of baseball in runs scored. So these are trends we started to see last year. They were up there in terms of runs scored and all that. But, It's been fantastic, along with who you just said there, Buster Posey's resurgence, and then you got Gausman and DeSclafani and others really contributing in the starting rotation to levels that we just did not expect.
So I guess I failed to mention Crawford would also be an all-star pick,
yeah,
potentially. Yeah, but he's also kind of in a stacked position, so I don't know. It's like,
no, I think he's going to get a nod this year. The way he's just emerged as a leader. I think everything that we're talking about, too, though, is another testament to the coaching staff and having the team prepared to handle these platoon situations that they put them into. And having Buster Posey on board with the 2 days on, 1 day off, you know, it looked like he was starting to struggle there for a little bit. And then he went out and had a three-hit day on Sunday. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know,
still can't score from second more than 50% of the time.
Still needs to unhitch that trailer.
Oh, slow.
I know.
But you know what? There was a big debate over whether we should have sent him on that second one. I think 100% of the time you do, because the guy had to make a perfect throw. You saw the reason he was safe on the the first one was the throwing up the line, right? The throw's going to go up the line more often than the next guy in the lineup's going to get a base hit with two outs.
I totally agree. Yeah. You're going to score more times than not on that exact play. You know, like you said, it's got to take a near perfect throw to get him. And it did. Yeah. You know, if he was a little faster,
it was a great throw.
Score easily, but
you tip your cap, but you still send him. I mean, look, Buster Posey getting thrown out at home plate, Buster Posey, name a more iconic duo, but I'm still going to send him every single time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you got to rely on two things. One, because there were two outs, right? So you already got the first base hits. If you hold him at third, now you need another base hit or another
right? Or a pass ball or something. Yeah.
And the chances are greater that you're going to score on that base hit than another thing is going to happen, like a base hit or an error. So, that's
because the guy has to field the ball cleanly. He has to make the throw accurately with, you know, enough time. The catcher has to catch the ball and make the tag. It's like a lot of things have to happen, right? And that's more likely than but anyway, it was just a funny conversation because he had all these pro third base coaches in Reddit going like, oh my God, is like, what the hell was that? It's just I find it hilarious. But I'm like,
well, they know
percentage baseball, boys. That's why the Giants are doing good. Percentage baseball.
All right. Well, let's talk about the games. Let's go ahead and talk about game one. Let me just bring up a highlight here. The Giants did win 7-2. DeSclafani with the win. He's now 5-2. He went 6 innings, 4 hits allowed, 2 runs, 4 Ks. And of course, the big hit of the game with the score tied at 2 in the bottom of the 5th, the aforementioned Brandon Crawford stepped up to the plate.
High drive into right center field. Hit very well.
I mean, to that part of the yard, come on.
Speaking of the new center field wall.
I know, but still.
I don't think that gets out a couple of years ago.
It's still, but it's a triple.
It's a triple. And by the way, did you see the count on that one, right?
What was it?
3-0. Yeah, it was a 3-0 pitch.
Wow.
It's a 3-0 pitch.
Awesome. They're letting Crawford go on 3-0.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the Giants themselves, they forced that situation because they really worked Davies. I mean, the guy threw 93 pitches in 4 1/3 inning to get to Brothers and get to that situation where Crawford hit that bomb, because most of those runs, in fact, all those runs on base were, you know, Kyle Davies' runs. So it was, you know, that's the Giants' approach at the plate. That's, you know, why they're doing so well is letting it go on 3-0 and working pitchers deep into counts so that they can get them through them quicker. Because this Cubs bullpen, I tell you what, they were on fire heading into this series. They had gone like 30 innings straight without giving up a run shortly before this series against the Giants, a franchise record. So to see the Giants beat up on the bullpen like this was just phenomenal. And then they added on afterwards. But that Crawford home run on a 3-0, that was what you want to see from a team that attacks.
Yeah, he ends up going 2 for 3. That was his 12th home run of the year, and he had 4 ribbies overall. So, hell of a game by Crawford. And what's his average up to now? Isn't it above 250 now? Has he crossed that threshold? I actually haven't taken a look
recently.
Let's find out.
It's got to be close to that.
260. Man. 260.
I mean, wow. Jesus. 260 and hitting bombs and, you know, playing really good defense. I mean, I know he had an error on Sunday, but you know, overall,
yeah. But if you look at
error of the year,
Tatis has like 15 on the season or something like that already.
Yep.
So shortstops are gonna make errors, but you just don't want to make them in bunches. And he's also made. I mean, that diving 360 play was insane the other day.
That was sick.
That was definitely still got it. You know,
I can't even imagine throwing a ball that hard at such an awkward angle. I just, that's amazing to me. You know, you give me all the crow hops in the world.
When we have our guys, when we have our guys out there, we have pretty good arms all around the infield.
Yeah,
it's like it's probably one of the reasons the Giants are winning a lot of games is defensively we have been better than it. Like, I think we remember a lot of errors that cost us, but defensively we've been pretty good.
I'm pretty sure the metrics show that too. The Giants had been like top five in defense.
Yeah.
Before this weekend, because this was not a good defensive weekend for the Giants. That is the one place they were lacking.
No. It was a bad defensive weekend, and it almost cost them game number three, which we'll get to, and may have cost them game number four. But regardless. All right, so moving on to game two. Now, this was the game. It's like, okay, let's lock away game one, right? Because game number two is going to be the bullpen game. And that's the one where you're thinking, all right, you know, most likely they're going to lose this one, especially they're up against Arrieta, who's been looking pretty good this year. Not quite a Cy Young form, but, you know, he's still a solid
veteran. Hey, he's a former Cy Young guy. You always expect, you know.
Exactly. And so a lot of people presume that Kazmir was going to start, and he was activated, and he did start. He threw two innings, but it was a bullpen game, and Arrieta just could not get out of the second inning, and I'm going to bring it up here. It started with an RBI single by Longoria. Then Steven Duggar clubbed a two-run home run. Then they got two runners on with two outs, full count. And Alex Dickerson stepped up to the plate.
There they go. That ball is hit deep. Way back there. Adios, Pelota!
And that Cubs fan right there.
Right, the Cubs fan. That was great.
Right in the middle of the screen. He says, oh, come on, man. I'm coming out to the yard. I got my hat. I got my jersey. I'm wearing my mask over my chin diapy. Oh, now I got to get – I'm going to get heckled the rest of this damn game. It's only the second inning.
I watched that homer with two Cubs fans, the bartender and my wife. We were just – we're all standing there watching that pitch when it happened, and they were just both like, damn. I was like, yeah. It was perfect. You know, it was like the game was over.
Yeah. That you had to think, if you're that guy, like, I'm here at the opposing stadium ready. I can't leave early. Like, I want to, but I can't. It's like, maybe can I move to another section? No, that's the vax only section, and I'm in the stupid COVID. I can't even secretly, like, migrate to another section anymore. Oh poor guy.
I never thought of
that.
It's much harder, right, to run around the stadium.
Oh, my God, you're totally right.
Yeah, everything's all.
That was a six-run inning, man. So they needed that because they only scored two the rest of the way, and it was a bullpen game. Menez got the win, 1-0, but they went Leon after Kazmir. It was Leon, Littell, Menez, McGee, and then Rogers. You had homers by Duggar, Dickerson, Vossler, Wade Jr. I mean, this was like the pen and the lineup that hit home runs. This was the River Cats beating the Cubs. It was such a weird lineup, and who performed well. It was weird, man. But this is, again, highlighting the depth and the strength of that depth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's everybody's getting in the mix. You know, it's not just one guy putting up big innings like that too. Like, the Giants have done that a bunch of times this year.
Yeah, put up that crooked number, man.
I've noticed the same thing. I've been trying to find the stat somewhere where I can see, like, you know, innings where they've scored four runs or more. I just haven't been able to find it. But I think you're right, because we've had multiple innings where the Giants go off, and, you know, you kind of know they're in cruise control for the rest of the game.
For sure. All right.
The Wade and Boston homers, it was good to see them add on, though, too.
Yeah, I think that was his second career home run, right?
Vossler?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was number two. The team that drafted him. Yeah, the Cubs drafted him. So he said he was happy to get them, but he wasn't aiming to get them.
All right, then game three, the Cubs faced the NL Pitcher of the Month for May, which Willie and I talked about last week. Kevin Gausman got the nod. Giants ended up winning 4-3. Gausman got the win, 7-0 on the year, allowed only two hits, no earned runs, 10 Ks in seven innings, and it's his ninth consecutive start of five innings or more, and giving up one or fewer earned runs. His ERA is now down to 1.27. I mean, holy shit. I forget, who was at number 12? It was Bob Gibson. Bob Gibson is the only pitcher to have a longer streak than those nine games. And he still got it going. So, I mean, this is domination, man. I mean, this is not – no Giants pitcher has ever done anything like this. This is such a remarkable stretch. And, you know, whether it be a doctored ball or not, we'll get to that in a little bit.
I mean, the shot you got right now is his hand rubbing his hands.
He's like, hey, I got my goo on my pants. But let's go ahead and take a look at some of the highlights from Kevin Gausman's start on Saturday.
Easy mark for the Cubs against Kevin Gausman.
He's all right, that's just the rosin bag. That's totally legal.
Hard hit chopper. Actually,
Brian had a hard time with Longoria.
I mean, that is filthy.
Swing and a miss. Nasty stuff from Gausman. His second punch out against Contreras.
But most times, just some of the ways like these balls dance. Just sick.
All, what is this, 10 Ks he had? I believe.
Look at that.
All on the splitter.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
The splitter is a nasty pitch. Always has been, but.
Just look at that. God.
Seventh strikeout for Gausman.
I mean, does the goo help you locate?
And then 97, you know? It's like, jeez. Oh.
Alright, so what? So far, he's keeping the goo on his shoulder, his hat, and his belt. That's the way you get away with it. You gotta have the goo in multiple places. So they don't notice and you keep going back to the same spot.
He struts off like an ace now, too.
Yeah,
he
does. He does.
Yeah. He's never put up numbers like this, but this is, man, talk about a shot in the arm for the Giants. I mean, he's, you know, aside from Jacob DeGrom, who is just on another planet, I mean, he's got to be the second best pitcher in baseball right now. I mean, it seems like it to me, but I don't know. Do you guys have any opinions about that?
Numbers-wise, yeah. I mean, 7-0. It's hard to argue. It's hard to say, you know.
Well, you know, wins and losses, whatever.
If I had to just like pick a pitcher to start a rotation around, I don't think I put him number two. I think there's still a few names that probably trump him right now. But as far as this season goes, yeah.
Yeah, this season. Yeah. Not talking about overall. But,
yeah, from a Giant fan perspective, it's like when Timmy used to take the mound. You just kind of know he's going to go out there and do his thing. And I think the fact that they've only lost three games once all season is a testament to somebody like Gausman, because you know he's the stopper if anything bad's going on.
Yeah,
he's also very similar to Timmy in the way that you know, he gets a lot of swing and misses. You know what I mean? It's like he just got that same feel. Yeah, that same feel. Like I remember that game against the Braves, started off the 2010 playoff run, and it was just guys just diving at that ball in the dirt over and over and over again. And that's what that felt like with those 10 Ks.
Hey, by the way, don't you always find it odd how, I mean, cause I've scored baseball games since I was a kid, right? I love scoring. I love statistics and I understand, you know, like who gets the win, who gets the loss, how earned runs work after there's an error, you know, those kinds of things.
I think I know where you're going with this.
And it's the weirdest thing. Cause like, let's say in a traditional sense, right? So you have two outs, and a runner gets on because Crawford boots a ball, right? Let's say he gets to second base on an overthrow. So now he's on second with two outs. The next guy knocks him in with a single. That's an unearned run because it should have been the third out of the inning.
The inning should have been over. Yep. No, you can give up nine after that and they're all unearned.
Exactly. No matter how many, you know, hits you get after that, the inning should have been over, therefore the scores wouldn't happen. I always thought it was an odd when it's a home run hit after in that scenario, because that's what happened. He gave up a two-run bomb because the runner on base should have been out. There was two outs. It was an error. And then Patrick Wisdom, I think it was.
So I guess technically three against the Giants. You could give him one earned run because maybe that guy would have still batted the next thing. But, I mean, even it's all – you're getting into hypothetical at that point because the guy would have come up. Yeah, he would have come up with nobody on. So like
out of the windup, nobody on
with no outs to open an inning. Maybe he strikes him out in that scenario, but here he's got to keep him on or whatever it is.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
I, No, it makes sense. It's just funny how, like, a dude hits a bomb off of you. It goes as a hit against your record and a home run allowed.
It goes as a run against your record, just not an earned run.
But just not an earned run.
Didn't earn it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. It sounds like
he hit it over the fence, but he didn't earn it.
It's the type of sports rule that sounds like kids, like, you know, oh, but, you know, I wouldn't have had to throw that pitch if it wasn't for Johnny screwing that up, you know? It totally sounds like it was written by 12-year-olds.
Yeah,
I mean, the fact of the matter is that, like, who cares really, except if you're guys like us who are nerding out and having a podcast. It's like, well, two runs scored. Ultimately, that's what matters, right?
The guy pitching cares for content.
Yeah, sure. Right? Yeah, I mean,
oh, hell yeah. Got to have more pitches, all that stuff like
well,
that.
Well, like, he gets to shave two earned runs off of his ledger this year because of that, you know?
But rightly so. It's not his fault. Crawford should have made the out.
Totally
now agree. MLB, you know, game day, they have, I was doing yard work, so I was on the app, and I saw that the home run was hit, and I was like, oh, well, you know, those are two unearned runs, because I was thinking about Gausman's streak of the one earned or less, you know, mm-hmm. And so I opened up the game day app and look at the box score, and it actually says two runs, and then it says one earned, and his ERA has gone up, and I was like, wait, no, that's wrong, I know that's wrong. And it lasted like that the entire game. Then I switch over to ESPN, and they have it correctly at zero earned runs. Mm-hmm. Later, they changed it. But I just thought it was interesting that someone at MLB or whoever operates that stat line totally screwed the pooch on that one for like the entire game. I'm like, come on! Gotta get better guys in there.
The Giants subreddit was all confused. Like, there was like, I'd never seen so many people care about earned runs before. There was like 20 comments like, why does he have zero earned runs? And then like,
learn.
It was like three or four guys were in every single one of those, like explaining it to these people. And it's like, guys, there was an error. Yeah.
This is the way it works. It's all about hypotheticals and butterfly effects when it comes to scoring. It's a very odd thing, but that's the way baseball is. Homers by just Dickerson. It was a sixth of the year back to back games. And then, of course, a scary ninth inning. I went back and kind of saw some of the highlights or lowlights, but highlighted by two errors. But hey, give credit to Tyler Rogers. He worked around those, and even though they had the tying run there on third, he got out of it. So, I mean, how was your stress level watching that inning?
Dubon, I mean, the guy was brought in as a pinch runner at the bottom of the eighth because he was getting brought in for his defense in the ninth inning, and then he couldn't hold on to the friggin' baseball at all.
Yeah,
you know, twice he couldn't get a grip on the ball, and it was just so frustrating. You know, Rogers is the type of pitcher that needs to get ground ball outs. And when you're not getting those outs, it's going to make the ninth inning hairy, almost torturous. And then to have what happened was just absolutely unfortunate with Crawford and Longoria. You know, as a Giants fan, I mean, it was just, oh.
I can't remember the last time I've seen that. Like a collision on a ground ball like that. Like you see it happen on fly balls, pop-ups, especially all the time where, you know, guys can't hear because the crowd is cheering or whatever, but a ground ball. And by the way, neither guy was like making the wrong play necessarily.
Right.
Like the third baseman is taught to cut that ball off because he's moving towards the bag. Right. So they're both kind of doing the right thing. It's just Crawford needed to see out of his peripheral that he was coming in and back off. I think it's really on Crawford if anybody, but it's hard to blame him too. They're both just trying to make a play, get a guy out, you know?
Yeah, so here's the play. This is top of the ninth, 4-2 Giants, but the Cubs have runners on the corners with one out, and here's the play you just talked about.
Tying run for the Cubs at first base. That's Baez. Soft chop. Collision. Crawford and Longoria.
Longoria just laid there like that, too. Third. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, he was hurt right away.
Both are okay. It's a one-run game.
You know, with the fact that they were trying to rush a double play, because you know Longo's trying to cut it off because he's going towards second. And he's trying to make the quick throw there to get the two. And you know Crawford's looking to plant real quick and throw the ball at the same time. So that's right when his leg gets hit.
Yeah, neither one are – they're so locked in on the ball there.
Right.
And you're not going to call the ball that inning felt like it was falling apart at that time too, right? Like, everything just felt like one of those scenarios where, like, oh, my God, this is how we're going to lose the game. It's all this rinky-dink bullshit. But, yeah, and then that happens. And you're like, okay, well, I guess we're going to lose this game for sure. even though we're 4-3 still.
That's what I thought. I mean, yeah, it's 4-3, runners on first and second with one out. It's like you can still get out of it with a double play or
this game's over
in an hour, you know. But yeah, that's what you're thinking. It's just like, here we go. That's it. They're losing. Or they're going extra innings and they're gonna lose.
Didn't you strike out the next guy or something?
Rodgers essentially got six outs in that inning or something like that.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, like how many outs he got.
But, I saw comments like he should be credited for two saves in that game.
No doubt about it. The unfortunate thing, though, is like you're just saying you can't really blame Crawford or Longo. I mean, Longo definitely not because he had the angle on the play, either going to second or first. But Crawford still, it's within his range. He can still make a play on it. So I'm not going to blame him, but unfortunately, Longo's arm was pretty moderately hurt, and now he's expected to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And that's
honestly, from the replay, it looked like his leg, because I don't know if you saw the way that their legs bashed, but then it turned out, nope, it's his arm. But I don't know. Old men falling down, it could be anything.
Yeah, and when he got up and, you know, and the trainers were – he was just walking kind of like slow and normal, though, like outside and into the dugout. You didn't think too much of it. I was like, yeah, he's – probably just going to be bruised and missed a couple of games, but yeah, some funky shoulder injury or something.
Well, the way he laid there at first, it did seem like he knew something was really, really off, and he didn't want to get up right away because he might have been in some pain, or he's just dramatic, you know.
he's like my son.
A lot of times, if you take a hit like that on the field, it's like, let me just lay here for a second.
You gotta gather yourself before you get up.
Yeah. But Crawford is, I don't know, like Crawford's built differently, I guess, because I thought for a second we just lost both. We just lost the entire left side of our infield, right? Like, oh no, this is crazy. And we're going to lose the game and the left side of our infield in one fell swoop. But, and like the two hottest bats on the team. I was like, oh my God, this is disaster. This is where it all falls apart and we end up.
Yeah, Longo's really been heating up, you know? Too. Mm-hmm. Really been heating up. He ripped open the season just like leading the team in homers and all that stuff like that. And then he went cold for about a month.
Yeah, he had like a full month.
He's been doing really well. So, it's gonna suck losing him for about a month. We're gonna see a lot more Vossler and Dubon and others.
It's 4 to 6 weeks.
So. Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. So again, you know, next man up. That's the way the Giants have been operating all year, though. So. So they won that game 4-3, just hung on. So they're going for the sweep on Sunday in game four. Johnny Cueto has been kind of up and down a little bit this year. He just didn't quite have it. He gave up two homers to Patrick Wisdom, who I honestly had never really heard of before. And as it turns out, he has like a little more than 100 professional ABs. He was actually drafted by the Cardinals. And he had 4 career home runs, I think, coming into the season. And he's already hit like 7 in 36 at bats. That's insane. I mean, that's like, wow, 7 home runs and 36 at bats. That's 1 every 5 at bats. I mean, his like batting average is almost 200 if you just count home runs. So anyway, he hit 2 against Cueto. He hit 1 the day before against Gausman. Even though the Giants did bust out to that 3-1 lead, it should have been 4-1 if Buster Posey was a little bit faster. But then that's when Wisdom came right back and tied it up with a 2-run bomb, then later hit another one. And they just, they couldn't add on the rest of the game. They just, the way this team has been operating this year, the pessimist in me, of course, always thinks that's it. But actually, I was sitting there going, oh, they got 5-6 innings left. They're going to have a big inning. They're going to rub for 3 runs in an inning. And it just never happened. And, you know, you just chalk that up to baseball. Maybe you chalk it up to, you know, a lack of, discipline. It's like, I think subconsciously sometimes there is something in a baseball player or a team's mentality where you're like, well, we took 3 out of 4, you know, kind of almost take the foot off the gas a little bit, if you will.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say also, sometimes when you won the first 3 in a 4-game series, you can maybe rest some guys or something like that. But we had a day off the next day, so that really wasn't it. It was just a game that we should have won that we didn't in this case, which is probably why it felt so bad. You know what I mean?
Well, you can also tip your cap to the Cubs. I mean, it lined up the way they wanted to line up. Their ace through 6 1/3, and then the bullpen that they like running out there, Tapera, Chafin, and Kimbrel, is exactly what they ran out there. I've seen that combo multiple times this season. So, like, they were able to shut it down. And, you know, If Buster was 2 years younger, maybe they would have won this game.
I think Buster needed to be about 8 years younger to. But the other thing, too, is it's also just the law of averages that the Cubs are a good team. Beating them four times in a row is really difficult. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're going to get one most of the time, even if the Giants are playing really hot. Most of the time, these two teams are going to split. You know what I mean? But, you know.
Yeah, again, you look at it as a sum of its all parts, and you know, you say, okay, the Giants take three out of four. You're like, yes, please. Thank you. You know, on to the next series. We'll take that every time. I mean, that's 750 ball. What else are you going to say about that? All right. So a lot of transactions and injuries have happened just in the short, like, 6 days since we last recorded, Willie. Holy crap. I mean, that's what's hard about this podcast. We always have, like, a book to read.
We had a lot last episode when that wasn't that long ago.
Swear to God. So we touched a little bit on Yaz, even though he officially was placed on the 10-day IL the day after we recorded. I went to the game against the Angels, which they lost, in which he crashed into the wall in right field. So he sprained his thumb. So he's been out. Vossler, of course, was called up. The pitcher who was mired in some controversy, Shun Yamaguchi, was released. Nick Tropiano was called back up from the minors. Kazmir was called up from the restricted list, made a start, and then was promptly DFA'd.
Yeah. So, Tropiano was DFA'd too, right? Weren't they both DFA'd?
Yeah, then he was... I'm going kind of in calendar order here.
Okay.
And then Tropiano was DFA'd too, both on June 4th. By the way, has that process ended yet? They haven't cleared waivers yet, have they?
I don't think so. I haven't heard anything about it. So.
Yeah, I haven't heard. I think it's 5 or 6 days to clear waivers or something like that.
There's a lot of speculation, though, that, like, okay, why are we DFAing all these guys? Are we about to make a move here?
I think a lot of it is just calculated, like, he'll clear waivers and we can reassign him, you know?
There's a lot of weird, complicated bullshit going on with, you know, how these roster moves have to get made. We don't understand it, really, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't, anyway.
No one's picking up Scott Kazmir, the 36-year-old guy who hadn't pitched in 5 years. I pretty much assume he's going to be back with Sacramento.
His hair is beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's growing really long.
Beautiful flowing locks.
Camilo Duvall was called up and then promptly sent back down, actually just yesterday. Bruce Maxwell, he was a catcher for the A's way back in the day, who gained notoriety for kneeling. He was like one of the first baseball players to kneel during the national anthem. But anyway, he's since been with the Mets. He was traded from the Mets to the Giants for cash. The relief pitcher, James, I don't know how to pronounce it, Scherfi?
Scherfi.
Scherfi, thanks. His contract was purchased from the minors. Thyro Estrada. Is it Thyro or Tyro?
I think it's Tyro.
Thyro Estrada. I haven't actually heard anyone say it. But that's the guy they got from the Yankees in one of their early trades. He was called up from the minors to provide some middle infield depth. And actually, he's been really hot down in the minors, so it's probably a good time. Of course, Longo was placed on the 10-day IL, but he's going to be out for a lot longer than that. The acquired James Scherfi was just placed on the IL as well. Aaron Sanchez now is on a rehab assignment. And then I already mentioned yesterday, Duvall was sent back down to the minors. So that's just all in this week.
A bunch of guys who didn't really even play though during those moves, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's a bunch of guys where it was just like, okay, they're doing stuff. I don't really know why, but all right. I mean, the biggest stuff was really the guys who were hurt and going down. So
yeah,
we don't know who's going to start the second game against the Rangers, do we?
Oh yeah, we do.
Seems like we do. Do we?
Okay. It looks like it's going to be Sam Long.
Oh, Sam Long. Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, I was going to get to him in a little bit, but I'll go ahead and talk about it right now. So it looks like he's going to start tomorrow, the second game against the Rangers. He began the season at AA Richmond, where he struck out 22 batters across 15 innings and posted a 3.6 ERA before he was promoted to Sacramento. He looked even more unhittable there, allowing just one walk and one hit in his first two starts while striking out 15 in 7 2/3 shutout innings.
Wow.
So between Richmond and Sacramento, he struck out 44% of the batters he's faced.
Okay.
That's
hold on.
Pretty
Before
crazy.
You give the other note, In his final start, his last start, a little over a week ago for Sacramento, he struck out the first eight Las Vegas Aviators that he faced in the game. Yeah. And then they got a hit, and then he struck out the ninth guy. And then he went back out the next inning, and he didn't strike anybody else out. But he struck out eight straight guys to start the game.
I read about that, too. So he's been absolutely on fire. He's been on a low pitch count, so I don't think we should expect him to be throwing 80 or 90 pitches on Wednesday. He may not even pitch the five-inning, you know, minimum qualification, especially if he's going out there and blowing guys away, because it takes, you know, more pitches to strike out a lot of guys. So, but, I mean, this could be one of those bullpen games where maybe he throws three or four innings. But this is going to be exciting to see this young guy come up, because he's been one of the higher touted prospects kind of rising through the ranks like a meteor in terms of his stuff. And he touches 97 and he's got a really good movement on his curveball. So we'll see. We'll see.
The good news is it's going to be he doesn't have to face a team that's much better than a AAA team in the Rangers. So,
yeah, well, they're 23-38 fighting for the worst record in baseball against the best record in baseball. So,
yeah.
But, you know, how many times have we seen this, right? I mean, that's great. Is the best record versus the worst record, that doesn't mean shit in a two-game series.
No, I mean, it's all still professional big league hitters for sure. So, you know, it's going to test them, but there's also the advantage a guy has where there's not the book on him necessarily yet, right? So we'll see. Yeah, it's gonna be a fun game. I'm really looking forward to it. It's also it's a 2:05. It's a 1 o'clock start for me. I think I get to watch this.
Tomorrow,
I get to watch this during the day. Yeah, I'm stoked.
How far is Arlington Stadium for you, by the way?
It's about 3 hours.
3 hours.
Okay. Yeah. Like I honestly, when I saw that this was happening, I was like, how did I not look this far ahead in the schedule and just make a trip down to Arlington? Because
yeah.
I would have, like, a 2-game series, I could have gone to both games pretty easily.
Yeah, just stay in a hotel.
Especially because one's a night game and the next one's a day game.
And then I could just drive home after the day game, right? Yep, and like it wouldn't be that big of a trip. You only have to stay in a hotel one night. So yeah, I'm kind of bummed that I let this opportunity pass me by. I don't know when the next time they're going to be. I went to the Astros Giants game a few years ago, and the Giants got destroyed because the Astros were like the best team in baseball at the time. This would have been a completely different scenario.
So they do visit Houston this year.
Okay.
And so I think you need to circle that on the calendar.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Maybe we can work with the Giants to get
a
press pass.
So, yes. All right, let's talk more about that. I'm gonna check and make sure that it doesn't coincide with anything important.
Yeah. I think it's two or three games down there in Houston. Okay. But how far is that?
Houston's only about 2 hours. Houston's a much and it's a more enjoyable city to visit than Arlington. Yeah, Arlington is basically like Dallas. It's there's Dallas, Fort Worth, and then Arlington's like really close by. So,
yeah, you know, Houston's one of those weird cities where I had a cousin live down in Galveston, and we were visiting, or he was graduating, I think, from college. And so I made the trip up to Houston, and I saw an Astros game in the Astrodome.
Oh yeah,
that was like such a weird,
that stadium was bizarre, right?
Didn't cold. It feel like being in a mall or something.
Horrific baseball experience. I mean, honestly, I walked out of that the dome just going, that is the most depressing baseball game I've seen in my life.
I actually went and saw a game there too when I was a little kid. And it was after and my experiences at the time were all Candlestick, right? Which is not.
Much better.
Yeah, not high on the list of like awesome baseball stadiums, but being there, I was like, this is terrible. It was just like the way the bat cracked, like it reverberated around in a weird way. And like, the whole place kind of looked dilapidated too. And it's just, it felt bad inside there. It felt like you were inside like a ratty old basketball gym that was huge.
Yeah, it was just this rundown concrete gray structure. They'd fire off fireworks after a home run, you know, and then the smoke would linger for like three innings. Like, it was just, it was the worst, man. And like, I love visiting baseball stadiums. I love it. Like, even shitty ones. But that one just took the cake. I was like,
I'll tell you this.
Never coming here again. And then, of course, they blew it up. So there you go.
Minute Maid Park is so amazing.
It looks amazing.
If you ever get a chance to go to that stadium, that is incredible. I mean, it's got AT&T Park or Oracle Park vibes, like all over the place. But it's much, it's newer. You know what I mean? It's like even more like state of the art and all that. But yeah, very, very cool stadium there.
Yeah, no, I've been to in the last like 20 years for these like newer stadiums, I guess you can call it. I've been to the Seattle's. Well, it was Safeco. Now it's like SunTrust. What is it?
T-Mobile Park. Oh, that's the other reason I should have gone to friggin' Arlington. They got the brand new stadium. Oh, man. I really
Globe Life or whatever it's called. Yeah. So, Seattle's nice. I've been to, obviously, Petco Park many times. That's really nice as well.
Yeah, Petco's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, Camden. I know that was kind of right before Oracle Park. That's kind of was the first one designed by HOK Architects.
So I went to, I went to that in Baltimore. Baltimore, that one feels like AT&T. It feels like the same people designed it, which they did.
It was, it was the same guys. So,
but yeah, Petco with the whole like the building built into the corner, it's just so sick.
The way, warehouse, like
the
supply.
Beach and the outfield, yeah.
It's no, it's a. There's so many nice parks there. That's definitely one thing I want to do after my kids kind of leave for college and get out of the house and we have empty nest. I would love to take like a trip
RV
over like
trip,
3 years, yeah, and visit like a third of the stadiums every year. You know, to complete them all. Oh man,
I hey man, let's talk about this. Let's get real about this. I'm in. If we want to do that, if we want to torture cast across America and go,
dude,
to a baseball
that would
game,
be sick. Across America, it works pretty well. All right, well, we're getting near the end here of episode 227. I do want to bring up a couple of things. One of them, of course, is our longtime beloved broadcaster Dwayne Kuiper. Did release an announcement, a statement through the Giants yesterday, and I'm going to read that right now. He said, quote, "I wanted to let you know that I may be missing a few more Giants broadcasts than usual, and I wanted to share what's going on with me. After some tests and visits with doctors, I was diagnosed with a medical condition that requires me to immediately begin chemotherapy treatment. I feel very fortunate that I have an incredibly talented team of doctors and healthcare specialists who will be assisting me throughout my treatment plan, and of course, the support and love of my entire family, along with our incredible fans. Everyone at the Giants, NBC Sports Bay Area, and KMBR is overwhelming and deeply appreciated. I still plan on broadcasting this season, though I may take a few more games off if I'm not feeling well, and want to thank my broadcast partners for their unconditional support and willingness to step in and cover for me. Thank you for your prayers and for giving me the space and privacy to focus on my health at this time. While this was not the adventure I anticipated, I'm staying positive for a quick and full recovery." So that was one of those shocks that just kind of come out of nowhere. But I mean, that's what happens with health issues, right? With people, it's not like you can predict them. But you know, you got Mike Kruko with his degenerative condition, which is not, you know, life threatening, but it is going to steal away his ability to move slowly over the next however many years. And now you got Dwayne Kuiper with obviously cancer. It just sucks, man. These guys are so beloved in the Giants community, and to see both of them struggling now with health conditions. I mean, obviously we don't know the prognosis or where he is or what stage or where it's located, but I just think we all kind of echo the same sentiment and hoping it's just some really minor thing and chemo can knock it out and he's going to be okay in however many months. But, you know, just hopefully it's not anything more serious than that.
Well, I'm sure he's going to get the best treatment available, which is good to know. Because, you know, he's in that bracket. So, you know, that's nice to know. But it's cancer scary, man. No matter how good the treatment is, it's kind of you're at the will of the disease. You know what I mean? Like, even though we've come a long way. So, yeah, I don't know. Everyone's sending out their prayers. He seems like a healthy guy in general, which is, you know, a good way to go into that kind of a scenario. If you have lingering health problems before that happens, then things can be a lot more complicated. But, yeah, dude, we need those guys for a bunch more years. They're the best.
Yeah, you have to hope they caught it early. That's really always the hope when it comes to any kind of cancer treatment and any kind of chemotherapy. And it also just shows the value of Kruk and Kuiper and how we can't take them for granted anymore. I mean, you know, you gave examples of Kruko as well, having his health problems, and the end of an era. It might be here sooner than we want it to be, and it's really kind of frustrating to think about, because, I mean, when you turn on the television, and I don't know about you guys, but when I hear Kuiper's voice, I feel like I'm hearing Dad. It really is that way. He's just got that fatherly tone to him, and like, you know, gather round, I'm just going to tell you some stories type vibe. And So, you know, you hope Kipe can get better soon and they can keep going for a few more years, but it is scary. You know, you notice they didn't say cancer in the press release.
They didn't say exactly what it was. Yeah.
But you don't go, I mean, I'm no doctor, but you don't take chemotherapy.
Chemo, obviously that's one clue, even though he didn't use the C word, but his son Cole Kiper, he tweeted out an image from the 2012 World Series in which they had the Stand Up to Cancer event, and it was all the Giants out of the dugout holding up the Stand Up to Cancer placards. And I remember because I was at that game and we were all given placards and we all stood up and held them for, you know, national TV. So the fact that his son just posted that image without any words, I think told us all we needed to know, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically F cancer. So
it's funny when I talk to, you know, people about their broadcast teams, it's like everybody thinks that their guys are the best, like Ty loves his Astros guys or whatever. And I've watched some of the Astros games with them and I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. But it's like, we actually have, like, I'm sorry, we just do actually have.
What is it, Todd Callis in Houston right now? Todd Callis calls
the game. Yeah, so they're fine.
They are. I like Todd. He's got a good voice.
But there's a lot of these broadcasters for these teams they're like these professional broadcaster types. You know what I mean? Yeah. That came up going to broadcasting school. Dave Fleming guys. And I love Dave Fleming. And I'm not like lumping him in to say that like that's a bad thing. But like what we have is we have these kind of like two old ball player best friends hanging out in the booth talking ball and like the love they have to be at the ballpark every single day. Like everybody was killing them last year when they were like doing everything on monitors and shit, and like they just kept talking about how they just couldn't wait to like watch baseball live again and stuff. You know, it's like just that you it radiates out, you know what I mean? And also there's no other duo in baseball that can riff off of the camera landing on a fan in the stands like those guys can. There was a game recently where it was like a one run game in the ninth, and like the whole ninth inning we were talking about a guy and his ice cream or something like that. And I was like, this is
what I love about these guys.
You know, we're like more focused on some dude and his ice cream than we are like a one run game in the ninth, because it's stressful as hell, but now I'm here just belly laughing, you know.
Instead, I know. So. I love it when they like focus on some kid over like a two inning sequence where he's like fighting sleep, and they're like, "Come on, buddy, you can make it!" Oh, there he goes. You know, yeah. If this long ongoing, you know, saga. I know that's the little things that they bring to the broadcast. They're just those are definitely two guys. My God, would you love to go out and have a beer with them? I mean, it'd be just incredible, you know. Anyway, good luck to Kipe, and hopefully, you know, it's not too serious. Another thing I wanted to bring up, again, we try not to get political, but, you know, I thought it was worth pointing out the Giants. We previewed this last week, Willie and I did. But, of course, Giants on Saturday were the first Major League Baseball team to basically recognize Pride, you know, this is Pride Month, of course, and being San Francisco, kind of one of the headquarters, if you will, symbolically of the LGBTQ community. I thought it was great. You know, they had just a patch and a hat. I mean, that's what they had. And of course, they had things throughout the game. And it was really interesting to see a lot of the reactions on social media that were, you know, like, "Oh, why are you shoving this stuff in my face?" and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, I hate it when they shove, you know, Jackie Robinson Day and Lou Gehrig's and Memorial Day, Father's Day, and Mother's Day. Like, you can go on and on and on with all the things that they, quote, force down your throat. But I guess this just draws the line. Like, it's the strangest thing. Yeah. It's not like, you know, people who are homophobic, that sucks for you that you're going to exclude a bunch of people in your life. But they're not making advances on one another on the field. People aren't exhibiting out in center field. Like, I don't understand this whole thing. And so Susan Slusser, who is a Chronicle reporter, and over the weekend, I didn't know this, but I guess she basically officially came out as bisexual because of the whole Pride Month thing. There was an email that she shared on Twitter. And I'm going to read it right here just to kind of show some of that horrible
still out there. Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that think this way, and you just kind of ask like, why does it affect, how does it affect your life so much? Like, does it change what you eat in the morning and how you drive to work? Like, I don't get it, but here's this guy. I'm a lifelong Giants fan and former season ticket holder, as are my brother and sister. I'm a retired law enforcement officer and a Vietnam veteran. I'm very sad to see a class organization like the Giants support these queer sickos with a day honoring them. They don't deserve the publicity and recognition. The Q in LGBTQ stands for queer, and that's exactly what they are. Okay. He's using it clearly in a different context, in the derogatory context. They're not normal people and should not, all caps, be honored for their weird lifestyle. I own over 50 pieces of Giant memorabilia and will never spend another cent on Giants, including game tickets. I've attended my last game. It's also sad that all the sports people, writers, etc. at the Chronicle are far-left radicals and support their abnormal behavior. There it is again, abnormal. The support of these queers is going to ruin the straight young people of today. Going to ruin them. As these queers get special treatment. I also feel sorry for you and your fellow workers for your crooked thinking. Now, she did not share the name and email. And a lot of people were like, wow, you know, you took the high road there, Susan. You shared it, but you didn't share who it was. So we could, like, go cancel him or whatever.
Get him fired.
Which is, I think is great. I'm glad that she didn't.
No, I think that's the way to do it.
Most people were obviously very supportive. And, you know, I had tweeted from the account back to her basically saying, well, bright side, that's less of these homophobes in the stands, you know, and she liked that one. It's weird. I don't want to get political. I already did, but I don't want to pontificate too long. It's just, I just want to say thank you to the Giants for recognizing Pride Month. I think it's a fantastic thing that they did. It didn't hurt anyone. It didn't cause an earthquake.
Well, it hurt this guy.
In middle America. And yeah, it's really hard, but I just wanted to highlight some of that bigotry that still exists in this world.
We need these days because we need to go like, look, I'm sorry, you're the wrong guy here. The guy who's weird is this guy. This guy's weird, and this guy is crooked, abnormal. Has the crooked thinking,
abnormal.
And is abnormal. Yeah, and, you know, it's like there's been a kiss cam for years in stadiums where you see straight kisses all through the seventh inning stretch, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody, you know, what if I were like a gay man who's like, stop shoving straightness in my face? This is basically what these people are doing. It's like, but it's just because, oh, it's not what you do, and it's icky to you, and but. It's like, just get over it, dude. I'm sorry. You're in the wrong. It's time for you to go. Get the fuck out of here, old man. But, you know, it's like the stuff isn't going to go away. There's going to be people who think like this kind of forever. And that's why you just need to continue to celebrate this stuff and show them that there's more people who are embracing everybody and no matter what their lifestyle is. And also, you can tell this guy thinks it's a fucking choice. And like, if a gay man gets around their kid, he's going to turn them gay or whatever. Which is also
all gay men are pedophiles, right? Yeah,
yeah, they're all trying to get in the bathrooms. And, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's funny though, not to lessen the Pride Night at all, but there are so many nights right now. You never hear anybody complaining, you know, about Irish Heritage Night. They're like, you know, screw those potato eating fuckers. They don't deserve a night. Like, you know, you don't hear that when the Italian Heritage Night is coming up. They're like, screw the wops, I can't handle. You know, they're not doing that stuff.
No.
So it doesn't make sense. Like the
Star Wars Day. God damn it! Shoving Disney down my throat.
Nerds. Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing though. These guys feel galvanized in this position, and I think a lot of it is because of how political movements have kind of fractured so far to either side of the spectrum. And a lot of people feel very much like they have support, and there's a lot of people who still think like them. So they feel like, I can say this shit out loud. Yeah. But they would never say this about like Jackie Robinson Day and being like, you know, throwing out N-bombs or something like that. Like, this guy, I'm sure, would never do that. And he probably thinks that's ridiculous.
Oh, that would be bigoted.
But he's, you know, the line hasn't moved yet as far as this kind of stuff goes, as far as sexual orientation goes. So.
You know, I will tip my cap to the A's. They renamed their LGBTQ night after Glenn Burke, who was the first known baseball player to come out as gay. He played in the 70s for the Dodgers and I think maybe the A's as well. So the A's decided to name their Pride Night after Glenn Burke.
Oh, it is great. Kind of crazy. We still don't have a lot of out professional players who, like, currently play.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's still very, very rare. And you know, and you know that there's a lot, of players who are that just can't, still don't feel like they can say it. And that's the thing. It's like, I also like, this is a sentiment that I saw that I think also needs to be echoed, is that people who do come out are very brave, but people who don't come out are not less brave, because there's a lot of reasons people choose not to. And there's a lot, and this guy right here being one of them. It's like, there's, you know, this Pride Month is for those people as well, for the people who don't feel comfortable coming out and telling everybody. I also heard another really, really nice thing. This is my last thing I'll say on this, but rather than calling it coming out, it'd be more fun if we could think of it as like letting in, right? Like, I'm letting people into my life, rather than like, oh, I'm coming out of the, I'm gonna let you guys know, because that still makes it feel like, oh, it's this, you got to tell me this weird thing about you, which isn't weird at all, you know?
Yeah, it's always been called like in the closet.
It's always been called that. Yeah, it's a shameful thing that you have to hide. You know what I mean?
Antiquated.
Yep. And it's really not a shameful thing at all. But I mean, the problem is that a lot of people still treat it that way. And so it's very understandable that a lot of
it's
people have a
2021,
problem with that.
You turn on the television, commercials have mixed race gay couples talking in the bathroom about their Amazon order. Like, let's get with the times, people. I don't even live in California, so it's not some commie California thing. You know what I mean? It's just.
But that's when this guy said,
something
about the you're gonna get special treatment. That's what he's talking about. He thinks that any acknowledgement of them is special treatment.
It's not special treatment. It's just, it's treatment, you know?
Equal treatment is what it needs. Yeah, it's literal just treatment. It's like, hello, you exist. I acknowledge your existence.
Two of my daughter's best friends have recently come out as, you know, one is gay and the other one is, well, she claims herself, you know, bisexual or whatever. And it, like, didn't change their relationship at all. She still hangs out with them and does everything. And she kind of told me that a couple of weeks ago. Oh, did you know my friends, and I won't say their names, did this and this? I said, oh, okay, well, you know, hopefully they have support from their family and everything else. And she's, oh, yeah, you know, everyone's supportive. But anyway, we're going to go watch a movie. And, like, it was just, like, nothing. And I just wish people could kind of understand, like, how does that change anything? And it's not like...
It doesn't.
You know, like, my daughter just, it was rolled out. Like, she's like, oh, it's like, okay, you like chocolate instead of vanilla. Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's go do something, right? And that's the way it should be. It's
my,
like,
best friend growing up, Arielle, was, you know, she's a lesbian. And when we were in seventh grade and she was still figuring stuff out, we, like, made out one night at, like, a sleepover. You know what I mean? But I was like, oh, clearly you're not. And I was like, okay, I could, you know, and she was like,
I was gonna say, did you turn her gay? I guess.
Yeah, I pretty much, I'm sure I did. But she was the best woman at my wedding. Yeah, you know,
that's,
like,
awesome.
Years down the line and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was just funny because, yeah, I remember she told me, and I was like, I know. But it was like, you know, it's like, you know, I was waiting for you to decide if you ever wanted to tell me. But
right.
Like, literally, it was like nothing ever changed. And that's how I hope that going forward that most people have their,
it's the way it should,
their
be.
Situations happen. But unfortunately, that's just not the case yet. And that's why we still need to have we need to continue to kind of, like, fight the fight, be allies the best way we can.
All right. So I wanted to end on a baseball note. So you brought this up pre-show. And so I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. But
I mean, it's all the talk, dude. Like, every time I go on Twitter, this is what everyone's tweeting about right now. So.
No, it's a big thing going on right now. I am glad that you brought it up. But, of course, the league has announced that they're implementing a plan over the next week to 2 weeks. This was released last week, so it should be starting about now. They're going to start cracking down on foreign substances that are on baseballs, and it's baseball's dirty little secret. They're comparing it to steroids, where kind of, like, everyone knows it's happening, but they're not doing anything about it. And so what was really interesting is when they released the statement, they said they're going to start cracking down. The very next start by Trevor Bauer, who is commonly among the top of the charts in terms of spin rate, suddenly precipitously dropped, like, more than 10% in terms of his spin rate. It got hammered pretty hard in his last start. And we'll see how it develops over his next several starts. But that was kind of an interesting indicator, perhaps right away. And when he was asked afterwards, he didn't deny. He still doesn't deny using substances. In fact, he has been a pitcher who a few years ago brought this whole issue up and basically was like, man, this is a problem around the league. You guys got to do something about it. So maybe, and I think Willie said this pre-show, maybe he just finally said, well, F it. I'll just join him. And maybe that's contributed to his, you know, dominance and his Cy Young Award and getting signed for $35 million a year by the Dodgers. I don't know.
Well, so so there's a video I linked to you guys earlier. Maybe we can link it in the show notes. But his average RPMs went from 2358 in 2019 to 2835 this year. I mean, that's just a gigantic. I mean, 400 extra RPMs.
That's like 20%. Yeah, that's way ridiculous. Way up there.
And there's no like mechanics change you can make, right? That will suddenly add 400 RPMs to your fastball. Like you can't be like, oh, I just figured out how to snap it just a little better, and 400 more RPMs. So it's like it's basically obvious, and this is obviously, you know, they need to catch you in the act. They need to like find your glove with stuff on it. But if you read this Sports Illustrated article as well, there's footage of balls after they've been tossed into the dugout, because you know it's like a ball hits the dirt or something like that, and the catcher just throws it into the dugout. Now notice always that the catcher throws it into their own dugout, obviously. But like there was a guy who like lifted a ball and was holding it without like just with like two fingers on the top of it, and it was sticking and not dropping.
Nice.
And there was another situation apparently where they put it on a glove and then they lifted it off the glove and like seams ripped off of the ball. So whatever they're using is insane. Like it's just the grippiness of it is just ridiculous. I've heard things like you mix suntan lotion with pine tar. Then there's like Bauer talked about using Coca-Cola, but now apparently it's just straight up glue, like just literal glue.
Let's just go for glue. Oh,
back in the day, you put snot on the ball. Now they just literally put
Crisco,
glue.
Yeah, yeah. A little Barbasol.
Yeah, if none of that's working.
Yeah, it was always like jalapeno.
Yeah, so it's apparently it's just blatant. And my thing is, if everyone's doing it, everyone's doing it. But it's like baseball has to decide if this is something we have a problem with, then they need to, you know, it seems like something that should be really easy to catch, by the way. Literally,
I love the old videos of like what's his face with the emery board in his back pocket, and he like flicks it out. It's all on video. He's like, I don't have it.
But like scuffing the ball, is a huge different thing than literally like applying a sticky substance that the ball grips to your fingers. You know what I mean? But it seems like really easy to catch. After a ball comes out of play, it has to go into some, like you can't just chuck it into the dugout. It needs to go to like somebody specific, and then they just test the ball. Is there something on this ball? Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem that complicated, right?
I wonder what the science is like. And you talked about this pre-show, so I don't know if you want to mention it, but that, you know, Bauer has a secret, potentially has a secret formula, and that might be part of the reason, because you said the Dodgers, all the Dodgers or a lot of the Dodgers spin rates have gone up, and maybe part of that, you know, investment was to bring that secret formula with them.
Yeah. So I was looking this up. So league wide, the spin rate is up about 2.5%. The Dodgers are up about 7.5% as a staff. Bauer being the highest percentage individually. But and if you watch this video that I linked, and you know, I'm sure you guys will, and we should put that in the notes as well. But if you watch this video, they talk about how Bauer apparently hired scientists to develop the best version of a sticky substance, which I'm sure has to not only be effective, but also maybe easy to hide, maybe colorless. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to look at, but I've seen a lot of videos of guys doing weird, they're like tapping the inside of their glove. There's a bunch of was it the Reds pitcher? They confiscated his hat at a game recently because they said there was something on that. You know, but there's a lot of weird footage where you see it, it's like on the arm. They've got a little, and it looks clear. So whatever they've got going, it's some sort of clear thing. And apparently what they're doing too is after the game, they're like taking rubbing alcohol to it to make sure that it's like off of their body or their glove or whatever, because it's like so
40.
Yeah, it's like so strong that you have to like actually break it down with something like rubbing alcohol. Like it's
Some sort of solvent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so, wondering, I mean, if
this is a legit thing, and this is, you know, if we're gonna bitch about the Astros and sign stealing, it just seems hypocritical to just go, well, you know, this just guys just, you know, whatever.
I find it fascinating because, you know, back in the day when, you know, they were using Vaseline and pine tar and other homemade concoctions, those were substances that were easily left on the ball, right? And I guess maybe today's, like you just talked about, secret formulas are such of a viscosity and difference in tackiness where they can have it on their fingers to provide that grip, but there isn't that much transfer to the ball. So there's lack of evidence on the ball itself.
I think it's mostly on their fingers, and that's the idea. So this is the other thing too, is that it's like they've figured out, it's like the shift. It's like instead of, before it always seemed like the substances were something like, I'm trying to scuff the ball, I'm trying to make it so it breaks in a weird way, right? Or I'm trying to like put slipperiness on the ball. Now it's like they've realized, no, what I need is I need tackiness. I need to make it stick to my hand so that as I release it and I, you know, push my fingers through the pitch. It's like, let's say a four-seam fastball, right? As you push through, the longer you can keep it in your hand and then the last second push it out, that's going to give spin rate. And or like on a splitter or a slider, right? Like you're putting pressure on the seam, and then the seams like rotating through the air is what causes it to break the way it does. It seems like now it's just like they've figured out. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the seams are lower, but it seems like rather they figured out that rather than scuff the ball to make it break in unpredictable ways, they realize, no, it's still predictable, but the way I want it, it's just more of what I'm trying to do.
You know, about the idea of hiring scientists to come up with something? I mean, that's friggin' brilliant.
I mean,
to hire scientists to come up with some solution that you can use to hold on better to baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you had
great thinking.
You know, Barry Bonds and Balco, right?
Developed
a secret formula for ingesting. I guess this could be one for, you know, tackiness.
If they're not going to catch me, I'll do it.
They talk about spends $1 million on his body and like treatments and stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's like we're taking the game and we're applying modern technology to it, and you can't really stop it, but you can make rules and say this is what's allowed and what isn't. And if we're going to say that it's not allowed to put weird substances on the ball, then it seems like an easy thing to catch. They just have to decide they're going to put the effort in, right?
On the flip side, I've always wondered, why do they want to put a stop to tackiness with the baseball? Don't you want a pitcher to be able to control a pitch more than not control a pitch? I'd rather the guy has an idea where it's going than the guy who doesn't.
Actually, watch this video, because they addressed that as well. Apparently this year there have been more hit batsmen as well.
You would
think that there's, but I mean the fact is like, pitchers are getting more velocity, so guys getting hit are getting hit harder. The break is so much that it's actually harder to exactly control it. I mean, they're getting more break.
So they're probably hitting people in the feet more on
they're
sliders.
Hitting, yeah, they're like hitting, that. You know. But also, like, pitchers are starting balls higher because they're expecting more break. And then if it's a hanger, it's not breaking. It's finishing higher. Yeah. So, I mean, there's you know, I don't know. It's like either we let all this shit through and we just say, hey, we're playing, this is the ex-MLB now, or we try to catch everything and make it this level playing field with regular humans playing baseball. I don't know. I'm not mad at it, honestly, as long as everyone's doing it, everyone understands what it is. It's like tricks of the trade kind of stuff. But it's just, to me, it's like we got to figure out what we consider cheating, what we don't. Like, and I brought this up, I think, Eric, you weren't there, I brought up, like, is it this is cheating, but like spending $50 million more than the next team is not cheating? To like, nobody even thinks about that as like cheating, but like, it's like that, all this stuff, it's like it all goes into the same bucket.
Yeah, whatever's allowed and what's not allowed. It's like,
yeah, you just
well,
yeah,
I mean, nothing prevents a team from spending, right? Nothing prevents a team from spending $50 million more. Nothing prevents a guy from using the tackiness. It's the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's totally just once you make it a rule, yeah. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh shit. Like if we had a salary cap in baseball similar to like football, then everybody would be like, yeah, you can't fucking do it or whatever. But we don't have the same type of rules. So, but like I particularly think that's even more egregious. Like I would hate if baseball became like, you know, Premier League soccer, where like three teams just win every fucking year because they spend, you know, five times as much as the rest of the league. Right.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's like all this stuff is just all goes into one bucket, but this is the new hot bucket right now. It's the sticky stuff. I'm sure we're going to spend the next few episodes talking about this. Cause it's, I feel like it's about to come to a head.
Well, the next few weeks, we'll see if some pitchers get busted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that Bauer's spin rate went way down in one start all of a sudden. So
yeah. Coincidence? I think not. I would really be curious. I know they haven't said what their strategy is to crack down on it yet, partially because it probably wasn't fully developed, but also they don't want to reveal all those details yet, right? But I do wonder what are the internal ways they're actually going to be starting to crack down on this, other than the telling the umpires, hey, you just got to check their caps and forearms every...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, how are they going to do that? Maybe they come up with a policy where, like Willie was saying, it's true. The catchers are like, oh, foul ball or ball in the dirt, toss it in the dugout. Maybe they hire a new person, a new ball boy, if you will, who is like just in charge of collecting every single ball that's thrown out of play.
It's like the humidor guy in Colorado, right? Like there's like a special humidor guy that like controls those balls, you know? So it's funny because you remember this. This used to be what would happen a lot is a ball would hit the dirt and the catcher would hold that ball back like this. The umpire would take that ball and give him a new ball. You don't see that shit anymore. I don't know if you noticed this.
They get and throw it.
As soon as the ball hits the dirt, that shit is gone towards my dugout.
Yeah, because a lot of times the umpires would look at it and then he would make
the determination. He would decide, do I put this back in my pocket or do I chuck it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not happening anymore.
They're always tossing it out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that is interesting. Yeah. You know, the umpire's not looking at this. Bye.
I think about how it's funny, too. Like let's say I always thought this was funny. Like, let's say a guy gets a base hit and then they throw the ball back in, or a guy gets a ground out and then they go around the horn and the ball goes back to the pitcher. And now suddenly that ball's fine to stay in the game. But if a ball barely ticks the dirt before the catcher picks it out of the ground. Nope, that's too much. But a ball can literally bounce five times into a shortstop's glove. The horn.
A guy could have an exit velocity of 115 miles an hour. It one hops the warning track, slams against a brick wall, gets ricocheted back in. Okay, give it back to the pitcher.
Here we go. Keep on going.
As an umpire, if the other team doesn't ask me to remove that ball from play, well, you know what? That's on them. They should have known.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's funny. As an umpire, how do you feel about this situation? Like, I got to feel like you'd have to feel some sort of responsibility. Like, okay, I got to know what's going on with these balls. Well, apparently, too, the sound is different. Like, it sounds like the ball is like ripping out of their hands. So the umpire has to be able to hear that, you know?
Yeah, you have to wonder if the umpires have noticed a difference, and since they haven't found anything, because they're not going to really go look for it. Unless you're a dick, you're not going to go look for it. You just really aren't.
They're worried about
saying no umpires are dicks.
Yeah, right. I mean, you don't care. You really don't. You know, I feel like this guy is throwing better because he's got the sticky stuff, I'm not running out there to try to. Oh, what are you doing? You know what I mean? No,
it's like that's not my problem. That's the league's problem.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, I'll only catch – see, umpires – I'll tell you, umpires are pissed if they're getting asked to do something extra because they should only be checking if one team asks for it about the other team. But
no teams are asking for it because they're doing it too. That's
right.
Like everybody's doing it.
Now they're adding something to umpires' plates. And honestly, umpires are going to grumble at this. You know, they don't want to do more work than they have to do. They're lazy by nature.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Every American.
Look at you, Angel Hernandez.
Bare minimum at their job.
Right. So. It's true. I mean, I wouldn't want to add that to my plate. Look, I'm making a major league game run. You know, I don't care that guy has, you know, sticky glue on his glove for half.
Yeah. I'll make my dinner reservation.
There was actually an umpire, a manager that got kicked out of a game recently, and apparently. I think it was for the guy who had his hat taken away, which I think it was a red. And apparently the manager came out, got kicked out of the game, and he was basically screaming at the umpires that, like, why are you taking my guy's hat? Everybody's doing this shit. Like, he was, like, laying it all out there bare, apparently, like, on the field. So it sounds to me like everybody just fucking knows that this is happening.
Yeah.
And open, it's just finally kind of getting to the fan base, and people are starting to notice, because there's a lot of nerds out there who pay attention to things like spin rate. You know what I mean? But I would never know until somebody goes, "Hey, did you notice the spin rate?" So, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, coming up, the Giants have two in Texas. Like we said, they're 15 games under 500, fighting for the worst record in baseball. Then they travel to the nation's capital to face the Nationals, who are currently 24-32. So, I mean, this is a road trip that, you know, you expect at least a split, if not going 4-2 on this one. And the Giants have a healthy road record now. And at one point, they had won 7 road games in a row. I think they're 19-13 on the road or something like that right now. So, I mean, they've been playing really, really good ball on the road. So I don't expect that to diminish, although they are dealing with the aforementioned injuries, and we'll see how that plays out. But it'll be exciting to see Sam Long on this trip pitching in a couple of nights. I don't know. Is there anything that you guys want to, you know, point out on these teams? And nothing special other than the long start, I'd say.
Well, they're facing two guys, Lyles and I forget the guy tomorrow's name. They're facing two guys that they've already faced this year, and they beat the Rangers in each of those two starts. So I could see the Giants scoring a ton of runs the next 2 days. I mean, this is a hitter's park. We saw it last year in the playoffs. We've seen it so far. Giants could have put up a ton of numbers this week, this two-game set. Gibson is the guy tomorrow. But they could put up a ton of runs. I could see them scoring like 15 in two games.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Hell yeah.
Steven Risotto asks, if Eric, are you a fan of Roberto Kelly?
No, I cleared that up last night.
Okay. I was just curious. So. All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 227 of the TorchaCast. I'm going to be on vacation next week. So I usually do the recording and the editing and all that stuff like that. So it might be a couple of weeks until we record episode 228, but we'll figure that out. But probably expect a week-long pause in between. But other than that, I know that Willie and I have podcast The Hard Edition still going on, so look for that. And he has some streaming going on, so I don't know if you want to talk about that, Willie.
Yeah, you can check me out on Twitter. I'm at Willie Dills, and twitch.tv/WillieDills, where you can find me streaming all the Hearthstones and stuff. Haven't had a chance to do it in a little bit because of some potential job things. I've been kind of busy with that lately. But once that all gets settled in, I feel like we're going to be doing a lot of it. I've been playing a ton of Hearthstone in my downtime, just not on my computer. I've been doing it all on my phone. So hopefully soon it will be on the computer. You guys can come check me out.
Good. Eric, anything going on?
No, just the usual. Join the Giants Chatter Facebook group. We're up to 500 members after 5 months of existence. Mm-hmm. And so good shout out to Giants Chatter for that. So join up there, Giants Chatter on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw that this week you guys crossed, or the group crossed 500. So, and you were also on last night with some of the guys, right?
Yeah, we did kind of a Cubs recap, you know, Texas preview. Sometimes we'll do some live streams. And since I'm back in the thick of things, I jumped right back into the thick of things.
Good nice. For you, man. All right, well, you can follow us on Twitter collectively at TortureCast or individually. Myself at ChadK21, Eric at 2OutHits with the number 2. Giants have had a lot of those lately. And then Willie at Willie Dills. You can also check out our podcast and anything we put up at torchcast.com. Obviously, we do stream this every week or every episode on Facebook Live. The video will be available there after we record, and then the audio version on your favorite podcast feed. So for Eric and for Willie, we'll see you next time for episode 228. Until then, go Giants and stay safe. Aboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchaCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchaCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchaCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.